today's passage, we are talking about Noah, and instead of reading all four chapters to you, I've put together a narrative that says basically the same thing without reading all four chapters. There once was a land filled with corruption, debauchery, wickedness, and unfaithfulness. In fact, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who wasn't utterly captured by their own sinful patterns. God looked and saw how far the people had run away from him, how stubbornly they shunned him and rejected faith. God was disturbed and saddened by the people. But there was one family amongst them all who had not succumbed as wholly to sin. In fact, the patriarch, Noah, was considered an upright and blameless member of society, and God looked on his family with favor. But God gave the wicked people what they wanted, an eternity to be left to their own devices, to die without relationship with God. So he sent a great flood to wipe clean the depravity of the world. But he protected Noah and his family. God told them to build an ark, to collect enough animals to continue the species, to gather enough food and supplies for animals and humans alike. This was God's great mission to protect the faithful. And the rains came, they poured, they drenched the ground, and the waters began to rise. As the waters rose, whoever and whatever wasn't on the boat was slowly drowned, laid to rest on the rising sea floor. It wasn't a pretty picture of happy animals on a boat quietly sailing away, but a heartbreaking story of death, the kind of death that unrepentant sin brings about. But through this storm, God had sustained his people. God had provided safety and assurance to those who loved him. It was a long journey, days and weeks and months of a rocking boat, cooped up animals, excrement, and damp fur. But after what must have felt an eternity, the rain stopped, the sea calmed, and the sun came out, and the boat, it simply floated. Noah and his family perked up. Could this be the end? Noah threw open a window and beckoned for a dove. He sent the dove out to find dry ground. Such hope wrapped up in one bird. Such hope that they might get to disembark the boat. But the dove came back empty-handed. More waiting. The next time the dove went out, it came back with a leaf. There was dry ground, but maybe not enough, more waiting. So the next time the dove went out, it didn't come back. Finally, it was time to step out of the boat and see the new land that God had given them. And it was beautiful, rich and fertile, filled with the animals God had protected, and it was good for raising a family. God made a promise. Never again would he flood the earth. Never again would he leave people to their own devices, to succumb to their evil desires. And he symbolized this promise with a rainbow. And this is God's covenant, God's promise to us. We are protected and sustained in relationship with God, with a rainbow to remind us.
So this week we are continuing with our journey through what we are calling the Gospel of Genesis. From the very start of this series, just a few weeks ago, the fundamental claim, the foundational claim that we want to make is that the gospel, what does gospel mean? Good news. The good news of salvation, of redemption, is not just found in the New Testament. that the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures, are not just some grand run-up to the main event, but rather God's great drama of redemption, of salvation, of wholeness for all of creation is interwoven into the story from the very beginning, from the first pages of Genesis and onward. There's just as much gospel in Genesis as there is in any other part of Scripture. And that's what makes it good news. And today, as we know, we're dealing with the very well-known story of Noah and the flood. And it would be false to say that this story does not include a lot of judgment, destruction, and death. And yet we've also said that Genesis is also the gospel. It is also good news. And so, as is the case with any well-known story to us, as we ponder this story together, we have to ask God for the grace to listen to it anew, to hear this story with fresh ears, to read it with fresh eyes, so we can hear the gospel coming through even in a story that we associate with destruction and judgment. So first, what do we know about Noah himself? What do we know about him? We know that Genesis lists him as the grandson of Methuselah. It also tells us that Noah had, how many sons did he have? Three. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. We've also heard this morning that Noah was known by others as one who was blameless. This doesn't mean that Noah was perfect, far from it. But what this is trying to tell us in the context of the story is that, unlike those around him, that Noah and his family were largely uncontaminated by the moral wickedness by which he was surrounded. Noah lived in a culture that was unimaginably degraded, horribly corrupt, and yet he himself was different. Genesis paints him as one of the few, if not the only, man of faith in an entire world that had turned its back on God. Makes me think about a line by Henry David Thoreau, who once said, "If I seem to walk out of step with others, it's because I'm listening to another drumbeat." That's a good description of Noah. It's a good description of genuine faith. That any Christian, any believer who embraces a deep faith in God will wind up walking through life to another kind of drumbeat. Being a Christian, a follower of God, a disciple of Jesus, it means that in some way or another, we are going to be out of step with the world. There is no way to be a disciple of Jesus and completely fit in at the same time. If we are disciples of God, it means you are going to have to make decisions that distinguish us from the rest of the world in which we live. That's what made Noah different. He marched to a different beat. He walked in a different way, and it showed. So Noah lived differently than those who were around him. But what else do we know about Noah from the text? In Genesis chapter 6, verse 9, Noah is described as a man who walked with God. A man who walked with God. Raise your hands if you like going walking. All right? I do quite a bit. Now, when you go walking with someone, presuming, okay, how do you walk when you walk with someone? Do you walk in front of them? Behind them? That's why I walk with David Bale, because I can't keep up with him. But generally, when you walk, though, where do you walk? Do you walk alongside, right? And what do you do while you're walking with somebody? You have a blether, right? Have a conversation. share stories, talk about life, become known and know someone in new and interesting ways. And Noah is described as someone who walked with God. Not walking in front of God, not walking behind, but walking with God. And in fact, in all of history, throughout all of Scripture, there's only two people who Scripture describes as walking with God. Noah and, any guesses? Enoch. But you weren't expecting that one. Noah and Enoch are the only two people of whom this particular phrase is ever said. Walking with God. It means to move in the same direction at the same pace in which God is going. It means to keep in step with God. That's the kind of man that Noah was. He was also a man of obedience. In chapter 6, verse 22, the text tells us how Noah responded to God's command for him to build the ark according to God's specifications. The text tells us Noah did this. He did all that God commanded him. And again, in chapter 7, verse 5, after being told to go into the ark with all of the animals, we've seen these wonderfully vivid pictures that Kylie shared with us in the children's time. We know it wasn't exactly a luxury cruise. It says again, and Noah did all that the Lord commanded him to do. As one who walked with God, Noah never shied away from obedience, even when that obedience to God put him at odds with others, even when that obedience to God's commands made him look like a fool in the eyes of others. Because surely that's how Noah must have looked to other people. So imagine this. Close your eyes for a second. Close your eyes. Imagine this enormous ark and seeing Noah leading the animals two by two into said ark, and there's not a cloud in the sky. What on earth, we think, is Noah thinking? But all Noah was, open your eyes, Noah was concerned about was obeying God's command. And we don't know if Noah had any internal doubts. The text is silent on the issue. But we know that Noah is a human being, so maybe he did have doubts, maybe he didn't. What we do know is that, doubts or not, he chose to obey and to trust God down to the letter. Even when others would not understand, even when he himself did not understand. So in this part of the Gospel of Genesis, God called his servant Noah to make a proactive leap of faith. God asked Noah to trust him, to do everything he commanded him, and that's what Noah did. And in one very real sense, every disciple of Jesus has the same sort of call from God. The call of obedience is placed upon each of our lives from God. This is made clear for us in the New Testament as well. Right from the very start, when Jesus called his first disciples, they're out fishing with their nets, and he said, "Come and follow me." I think a better translation is, "Come and obey me." Right? Conform your life to my teachings, is what he was saying. Obedience to God is the very heart of what it means to be a disciple. Time and again, I've heard a lot of talk in my ministry about the need for a church, or the church as a whole, to have a successful ministry. When I was first ordained as a pastor some years ago, somebody said, "I hope you have a very successful ministry." Seems like a nice thing to say, but it kind of stuck in my head, obviously. I still remember it. And we know what we usually mean when we say such things about a church or about a pastor or about our own lives. It means, we usually mean, more people coming to worship, more influence in our culture, perhaps even a bigger financial budget. We have usual things we associate with success. And I have to admit that none of those things are inherently bad things. At the same time, the story of Noah, the good news of Noah's story, challenges us at the most fundamental level to reconsider what we mean here in Kemne Kirk when we say that we want a successful ministry. Friends, the greatest kind of success we can have is not more people in the chairs. It is not an increased budget. The greatest kind of success we can have is found in obedience to God. It is found in faithfulness to God's call, wherever that call may lead. I recently came across a story about a missionary from the earliest 20th century, a fellow named Dr. William Leslie. Anybody ever heard of Dr. William Leslie before? I'm not surprised, nor had I. This is new to me. But in 1912, he trained as a medical missionary, and he went to live and minister to tribal people in a remote corner of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He moved his whole life out there to try and make a difference, to try and have a successful ministry of winning converts and all the things that we hope for. He was out there in Congo for 17 years. And in 17 years, he did not see one single convert. I'm trying to let that in for a second. 17 years and not seeing a single convert. He returned to the United States a very discouraged man, believing totally that he had wasted 17 years of his life, that he wasn't successful, and then 9 years after he returned to the United States, he passed away. We thought that was the end of the story. But it wasn't. In 2010, just 8 years ago, another missionary team made a shocking discovery in that same corner of the Congo. When they came there, they found a network of churches hidden like glittering diamonds in the dense jungle, the same area where Dr. Leslie had devoted 17 years of his life. They found a church in each of the 8 villages they visited, scattered across 34 miles. They basically had their own presbytery out there. The team that went out there even found a 1,000-seat stone cathedral in one of the villages. They learned that this church got so crowded in the 1980s, with people walking many miles to attend, that a church planting movement began in the surrounding villages based off of that. Now, Dr. Leslie thought that he was a failure. He wasn't a success. Is that the case? Can't hear you. No, not by any means. Dr. Leslie was obedient and faithful to God's calling, to God's instruction, even though he did not see the results of his own labors. The same is true for our lives as well. We hardly ever see the end results of our own labors, do we? We see maybe a picture. We see maybe in part, but we do not get the whole picture ourselves. But being a disciple is not about seeing the whole picture. Like Noah, like Dr. Leslie, being a disciple is all about being faithful. It is about being obedient to God's will, to go where God points us to go, to live as God calls us to live, to trust in his plans for us, even when we can't see where they will lead. I think that is some of the good news in the story of Noah. The man who lived his life from a posture of obedience. And we see what happened, how God worked his faithful promises through Noah, through his lineage, carrying on his promise to always be God with us. That is the good news today from the Gospel of Genesis.